As we study the subject of carrying the cross, we're going to look at it in a little bit different way, in fact, a little bit of an unusual study. I hope that it will be beneficial to you. I hope it's going to be the kind of study that will help you to remember it. But our lesson text will consist of the parallel verses in the gospel accounts, which all address the same subject. We're going to begin with Matthew, and I'm reading to you from the English Standard Version, Matthew chapter 27, verse 32. As they went out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. They compelled this man to carry his cross. Mark chapter 15, verse 21 is the parallel verse in Mark's account, and it says, "And they compelled a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, to carry his cross." Luke records it in chapter 23, verse 26, "And as they led him away, they seized one, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, and laid on him the cross to carry it behind Jesus." John's account does not mention Simon, but the parallel verse would be John chapter 19, verse 17. "And he went out, bearing his own cross to the place called the place of a skull," which is in Aramaic called Golgotha. Those three, at least, of the four accounts seem to say pretty much exactly the same thing, and I wonder sometimes if we're not guilty of being a little bit lazy in our reading and our studying. And in our study tonight, I'd like for us to look at some details that are brought out by the wording of these four accounts, and in that way learn perhaps a valuable lesson on the importance of studying not just the chapters, not just the subjects, but sometimes even the words themselves of what the Bible tells us. Notice these details that come out in the wording of each of these accounts. First of all, the three basically agree. In fact, they all agree, and two of them have identically the same wording as they refer to the leaving of the place where Jesus had been abused by the soldiers. As they went out, they led him away. He went out. Referring to the beginning of the procession that would wind through the streets of Jerusalem, including those who had been condemned to die and their crosses, and the Roman soldiers who would carry out the execution, and various other ones who may have been connected or attached to the official procession. And typically a procession such as this would have wound its way through the streets in front of crowds that were gathered, some interested, some with connections to the victims, some purely gawkers who were looking out of a sense of entertainment. They began from that place where the Roman soldiers gathered just outside the governor's residence, the place where they normally would have assembled before being sent out on various tasks or missions. We might refer to it as the garrison in today's terms. It was there that they began, and it was from there that they went out. They led Jesus away. He went out to be crucified. Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all three, refer to a man of Cyrene. Cyrene was a city located on the northern coast of Africa in what is present-day eastern Libya. That's a country that, I hope most of us know where it is. It's certainly been in the news a lot in the last few weeks. A man from Cyrene. If you study the New Testament, particularly the book of Acts, you'll find that the city of Cyrene had furnished some men who were rather prominent in the beginning days of the church. In addition to the three references here in the gospel accounts to Cyrene, we learn from Acts chapter 2, verse 10, that there were those present on Pentecost from Cyrene who heard Peter's sermon there in Acts chapter 2. In Acts chapter 11, we read about that famous congregation where the disciples were called Christians first. Acts 11:26 in Antioch. If you read the verses preceding that reference, you'll learn that Antioch church appears to have been established among the Greeks by men who came from Cyrene preaching Jesus. And after they converted many of the Greeks, they heard about, in Jerusalem, they heard about this new congregation, and so Barnabas was dispatched there. And when Barnabas saw what success had resulted from the teaching of Jesus in Antioch, he immediately went and found a fellow by the name of Saul, who would later be called Paul, and carried him with him to Antioch, and the Bible says that they stayed there for a year, teaching and preaching. And it's no wonder, then, that by Acts chapter 13, we find another reference to men or a man of Cyrene, Lucius by name, and he's mentioned as being there in the church at Antioch and being among the prophets and teachers in that congregation who gave Paul and Barnabas their send-off on their first missionary journey. Some very interesting references to men of Cyrene. A little out-of-the-way place in present-day Libya. Luke says in his account there, Luke 23, verse 26, that they seized one Simon of Cyrene. They seized him. The word seized in that text literally means to reach out and physically, we would say, grab. I'm not sure grab would translate into the ancient Greek very well. But in our vernacular, if you seize someone, that doesn't mean you just slow them down. It doesn't mean you call them and say, hey, am I coming over here? That means you literally reach out and grab them. You physically take hold of them. Simon of Cyrene was seized by the Roman soldiers who were escorting Jesus in that procession. They literally laid hands on him and pulled him aside. Suffice it to say, he definitely did not volunteer for the task. Mark and Luke both say that Simon was coming in from the country. This wording literally means into the city from the surrounding countryside. He was headed into town. The procession was going through Jerusalem eventually to head out of town. There appears to have been absolutely no connection between Simon and the mob who no doubt were following along the procession and standing in the way and antagonizing Jesus and mocking and calling out to him, Simon doesn't even appear from that wording to have been among the onlookers. Perhaps he didn't even know what was going on. It looks as though he was just simply heading into the city from outside the city. Some have suggested perhaps he was going in to observe the Feast of the Passover. Importantly, Simon had absolutely no idea what he was getting into. Possibly didn't even know who Jesus was. But look how famous he has become because of his connection to the cross of Jesus. Matthew and Mark each say that they compelled Simon to carry the cross of Jesus. The word that's used there, the word that's translated into English, compelled, is exactly the same word that Jesus used in Matthew chapter 5, verse 41, where he said, "And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain." The English Standard Version translates it, "Whoever shall force you to go a mile." And the word literally does mean forced. Simon was compelled. He had no choice in the matter. He was pressed into public service. There was, as you recall, a tremendous amount of antagonism between the Jews and the Romans. Hence the instruction of Jesus, particularly regarding being compelled to go a mile. The Roman soldiers were permitted by law to compel a Jew to carry whatever burden the Roman soldier happened to be carrying for a mile. It was all the law allowed, all the law demanded, and hence there were mile markers located in many places along the main ways of travel. And when someone would come to the 1 mile marker, typically the Jew would throw down the burden and say, "This is as far as I have to take it." Jesus advocated showing a greater spirit. If you're forced to carry a burden a mile, go ahead and take it too. Calling to mind the words of the Apostle Paul, "In so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head. If your enemy's hungry, feed him. Thirsty, give him a drink." Simon was compelled to carry the cross of Jesus. Mark is the only writer, Mark chapter 15, he's the only one who adds this particular personal information about Simon of Cyrene. Mark says, "He was the father of Alexander and Rufus." Huh? Who? Why has Mark included that very obscure information? And why has no one but Mark included it? Is it worthy of being in there? Is it something that we really need to pay attention to? Or is it just some incidental? You know, we say that there's no such thing as a superfluous word in the Bible. In other words, every word is important. We do know that Mark's account was written to the Roman reader. We know that both from its contents and also from ancient historical writers among the church fathers. For example, the internal evidence is in things such as in the telling of the story of the poor widow who cast in all that she had into the treasury, Mark translated the 2 mites into a farthing, which was the Latin measure of money, thus translating the amount of money she gave for the benefit of the Roman reader. It is assumed that Alexander and Rufus would have been known, perhaps well known, to the Roman readers of Mark's gospel account. Perhaps they were prominent Christians in that part of the world. In fact, in the last chapter of the book of Romans, the Apostle Paul mentions by name no less than 29 people that he sends greeting to, many of whom had connections with him in other places. And in verse 13 of Romans chapter 16, Paul sends his greeting to a man in the church at Rome by the name of Rufus. Most commentators admit that there is a very strong likelihood that this Rufus was the same Rufus who's mentioned by Mark as being the son or one of the sons of Simon of Cyrene. Well, this story gets even more interesting when we read the whole verse there in Romans 16, verse 13. Greet Rufus, chosen in the Lord, also his mother, who has been a mother to me as well. It's very interesting to wonder if perhaps Paul's acquaintance in the church at Rome by the name of Rufus, whose mother had taken Paul under her wing at some time in some way, if perhaps this was the son of the man who was forced into the task of carrying the cross for Jesus. If this was the same Rufus that Mark mentions as being the son of Simon, why didn't Paul mention Simon? He mentions Rufus and Rufus's mother. What about Simon? Perhaps Simon was dead by this time, at least 20 or more years after the occurrence of Mark chapter 15. Why didn't he mention Alexander? If this was the same Rufus and the same son of Simon who had carried the cross of Jesus, perhaps Alexander was dead. Or perhaps Alexander lived somewhere else. Maybe in the city of Ephesus, where a prominent Alexander in the church is mentioned in Acts chapter 19. We don't know for sure. But back to Simon. What else do we know about Simon? Luke says they laid on him the cross. That wording seems to imply that the cross, even though most commentators suggest that it was not the entire cross, but just the cross piece, for the stake normally was already prepared and was lying by a pre-dug hole on Golgotha. But perhaps that cross piece was too heavy for a man to easily bend down and pick it up and throw it upon his shoulder, and I suppose that certainly must have been true. As Luke says, they laid on Simon the cross. One final detail mentioned by Luke. They laid on him the cross to carry it behind Jesus. King James Version says, after Jesus. It's clearly a word which designates an order. And in the order of the procession, the condemned man, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, was walking, and directly behind him was the man who had been forced into the task of carrying the cross. Historians tell us that the Roman soldiers would typically have chosen a very long and circuitous route through the city, enabling as many of the residents of Jerusalem as possible to see and watch this procession and to become even more fearful of the power of the Romans. In verse 28 and 29, Luke says that there followed him a great multitude of the people and of women who were mourning and lamenting for him. But turning to them, Jesus said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children." Jesus seems to have been warning those citizens of Jerusalem of the horrors that would come to pass in just a few short years when the Romans would utterly destroy the city and slaughter millions of the Jews. Simon, right there behind Jesus, had a front row seat, so to speak, to everything that was said and everything that was done. There is one final question that nags at us, begging to be answered. Perhaps you've noticed, contrary to what we've always said, the Bible doesn't actually say that Jesus fell under the weight of the cross. Where did that come from? Actually, that is a conclusion that we have been pretty much able to draw from this. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all explain how Simon was forced, was compelled, was seized alongside the way and forced into the task of carrying the cross for Jesus. However, John says in John 19, verse 17, "And he went out bearing his own cross to the place called the place of a skull, which in Aramaic is called Golgotha." And so it appears, when we put together what we know, that Jesus started out carrying the cross, but apparently was unable to complete the task for surely hardly any other possible explanation could account for Simon being pulled from the roadside and forced into the task of carrying the cross. The old song says, "Must Jesus bear the cross alone, and all the world go free?" No, there's a cross for everyone. And there's a cross for me. There was a cross there for Jesus, but it was also a cross for Simon, Simon of Cyrene. Simon was blessed that day by something that he was compelled to do. Simon, in carrying the cross of Jesus, appears to have been doing for Jesus what he could not do himself. The beatings that he'd endured, the loss of blood, the pure exhaustion, both emotional and physical, surely had weakened Jesus to such an extent that though he started out carrying his own cross, as John says, Simon had to step in and finish the task. There are many things today on this earth, many people that the Lord cannot reach, but he's given that task to you and me. And we have this treasure in earthen vessels. The responsibility is upon our shoulders. I mentioned that Simon perhaps didn't know what was going on, perhaps didn't even know who Jesus was. There's an illustration there for the fact that sometimes, how many times we do things for Jesus without even knowing it. You say, well, how could that be possible? Remember in Matthew chapter 25, when Jesus depicts the scene at the judgment, to those who were on the right, he said, come, you blessed, enter into the joy of the Lord, for when I was hungry, you gave me to eat, thirsty, you gave me drink, naked, you... And they said, Lord, when did we see you hungry, thirsty? Jesus said, as often as you did it to the least of one of these, you did it to me. Yes, there is service that we render for Jesus that sometimes we don't even realize it. Jesus himself said, if anyone will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation, we invite you to respond as we stand and sing.